Our guest today is Chris Hesse, who's he's just told me he had over 30 years in Formula One. So before that, Chris, welcome. What got you interested in motorsport in the first place? And how old were you?
When I was a young boy, I was always interested in Formula One. I used to watch it on the TV. And then as I got older, I used to go to Silverstone, Brands Hatch, you know, for the Formula One Grand Prix and watch it on the TV with Murray Walker. So yep. I was a very, very keen enthusiast. And a few years later, my father used to be a HGV driver and he had a heart condition, so he couldn't drive the petrol tankers anymore.
Right.
And my parents, they'd moved down to just outside of Didcot, where the Williams place was.
Yeah.
And my father started working as a van driver for Williams, just part-time. You know, when they needed somebody urgently, my father would go and do it.
Yeah.
So a few races I went as a guest of Williams along with him when he obviously did a van run to the Grand Prix, and I'd be in the paddock and all the rest of it. And I got really enthusiastic about it. And back in the day, back in the good days of Formula One, my father went to Ram Automotive in Bicester to either collect something or deliver something, because back then a lot of the teams used to kind of help each other out a bit.
Yeah.
You know, one machine shop didn't have the proper milling machine that another team needed. They'd ask him if they could produce some components for him. Yeah. And he started talking to Mick Ralph of Ram Automotive, Formula One team. Yeah. And he said about me being so enthusiastic about Formula One. He's, you know, because I was a trained mechanic anyway. I'd done my apprenticeship and I was working for a Ford dealership in my local town. And Mick Ralph said, well, send him along for a chat. So my dad called me later on in the day and said, Mick Ralph of Ram Automotive wants to have a chat with you. So I drove up there and then he said, so you want to be a mechanic? I said, well, yeah, I'm in a mechanic anyway, but, this is all new for me. He said, yeah. Well, we're looking for some new people to start the new season with. He said, and he showed me around and showed, you know, explained what they do and everything else. And at the end of our chat, he said, well, you can start on Monday. So I said to him, I said, well, you know, I've never done any form of motorsport before. And he said, well, don't worry. He said, we'll give you a week. If you don't get up to our standards, we'll sack you. The choice is yours. And I thought, well,
okay,
you've got to go with it.
Yeah.
I started work there and under the guidance of Ray Bolter, who was the chief mechanic.
Sure.
And I started off as the front end man on Winklehock's car. And, and away we went.
So when was that?
That was 1984.
Okay, right.
Philippe Alliot and Manfred Winklehock.
That's right, yeah.
And it was a fantastic experience. You know, it was hard because I was learning.
Yes,
you know, they'd send me down the machine shop or the fabrication shop to get a strip of stainless steel. And I used to think, well, you know, what's stainless steel? And I used to sort all through the racks before, because new. Everything was new. So, yeah, it was entertaining, to say the least. A good team.
Yeah. So how long were you there for?
I was there until, obviously, the Formula One thing slid into oblivion in the end of 85, into 86. And then they wanted to do Formula 3000 because that was the new race championship.
Yes.
So we converted the F1 car. We put a Cosworth engine in the back of it, and we did a season of Formula 3000, which was an absolute
disaster. So what engines were you running in F1 then, Chris?
It was the Hart Turbo.
Oh, yeah, of course it was.
The Explodo engine.
Yeah, that's right.
We were constantly changing engines and turbos with Brian Hart.
Lots of practice.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I remember we was in Rio doing a week's testing before the first race there. We must have got through about a dozen engines.
You know,
hear Mick Ralph and John McDonald shouting and screaming at the back of the garage as the engine went by, car went by, and the engine went bang. And yeah, so that was their demise because they, they just couldn't carry on anymore.
And when you think, what is it now, Chris? Is it six engines a year?
Yeah.
We were getting unbelievable,
six engines a day.
We'd
have all the engines lined up at the back of the garage, all fully built, ready to go, you know, exhaust and everything on them. And we were changing them non-stop, and the turbos.
Yeah.
I can remember, the, you know, Mick Ralph would be saying on the radio, okay, the turbo's gone, we've got to change it quickly. And as the car pulled in, you could see the turbo white hot through the bodywork. And we used to have two buckets to put your hands in to cool them down while you start to unbolt the turbo to get it off, to get it back out on the track again.
Yeah.
Gosh. It was a bit of a nightmare, but it was a massive learning experience.
Absolutely. I mean, Beaky said to me once that at Lotus in the late 60s with the DFVs, he said, Gary, we get through four engines in one session.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing. Yeah,
exactly. You know. Yeah, he was always working on them.
So you must have been, by the end of it, you must have been bloody quick to change an engine.
Well, yeah, you kind of, you know, we all work as a team together. So we all knew where the other guy was going to undo certain bolts. We had a good working system, you know. Yeah. And obviously, if it was the other car that had blown up, you'd go and help them out. While your car was out on track, you'd rush over and, you know, you'd be draining the oil out for them. Anything you could do to help them get their car back out again.
So how many of you were on the team in 84 then, Chris, in total?
Back then, it was only three mechanics
per car.
The spare car, so you had like nine mechanics, and then you'd have an engineer on each car. You didn't have all these data engineers back then. The main engineer was he did everything. And then you'd have the chief mechanic, who was Ray Bolter, and then Mick Ralph and John McDonald, obviously team owner. And you might have maybe a couple of truckies, two or three truckies, depending on where they were going. So it was very, very small.
So 15 or 20 people?
Yeah, and that'd be it. And the factory would be empty. When we went away, nearly everybody was involved. You know, you'd have a travelling fabricator that would help out and that sort of thing. And they'd come along with you. I think the secretary, some of the races, she came along to as well. So the place was just empty when we left.
I mean, thinking about it off the top of my head, how many people are on the car now?
Oh, God.
20?
Yeah.
On one car?
When I was working at Renault, we would have had three main mechanics, front-end guy, number one mechanic, and a rear-end guy. Yeah. Then you'd have a gearbox man, a hydraulics man. You'd have a truckie, which is a fuel man.
Yeah.
Then you'd have about three data guys looking at different aspects, hydraulics data, electronics data. And then you'd have the main engineer on the car. So you'd be up to about 10 to 12 people. Maybe even
before you,
now. I mean, when you look at the garage now, you can't.
Before you even did a pit stop, absolutely.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So at the end of 85, what was your position then? Were you just still straight, you know, mechanic, or were you number one mechanic or anything, or what?
No, I was still just a straight mechanic.
Yeah.
And then when we started to do the Foreman 3000, they moved me to a number one mechanic.
Right.
Because obviously, you know, the integrity of the cars wasn't as much as it was on a F1 car, but it was a learning curve.
That's right.
They laid us all off at the end of the Formula 3000 season because they said it's just not sustainable.
No, it's not happening. Yeah.
The time when Leighton House were just about to start coming into Formula 1.
Yeah.
And they were going to use the old Ram factory, but obviously it had to be rebuilt.
Yes.
And I remember we were clearing the factory out, taking our own personal tools, because that's what you used to use back then. You'd use your own tools.
Of course.
And Harvey Spencer, who was the chief mechanic on the Leighton House team at the beginning of it, he approached me and he said, you know, what's going to happen now? I said, well, we've just been all made redundant. And he said, well, give me your details. And he said, I'll see if I can get back in touch with you. And I think I was one of the first mechanics that Leighton House employed.
Right.
Yeah.
So Would that have been 80,
that would have been 87.
87, that's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right.
And we were working out of the old March factory in Bicester. Building Indy cars, Group C cars, Rolt F3 cars. They had a huge production facility there. And we had a small area right in the far corner just to start building the first F1 car before the old Ram factory had been refurbished.
So who designed that first Leighton house then?
It wasn't Adrian Newey. I think it was...
No, it wasn't. That's right.
Oh, I can't remember his name now. It was part of the March group.
Right. I'll have to look it up.
It was one of their guys that worked for March Racing.
Yeah. So you went into Leighton house as a straight mechanic again, or...?
Yeah, straight as a number one mechanic.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But I was at the start. I was on the spare car.
Okay.
Harvey was bringing some guys with him from Brabham because Brabham had actually folded up.
That's right.
And, I think it was Robin Day was one mechanic. He was on one car. I can't remember the name of the other guy now. It's been quite a long time.
Who was your drivers that year, Chris? Was it Ivan Capelli?
It was Capelli, and I think it was it Alio to start with?
Philippe Alio, yeah.
Yeah, and then Guzman joined.
Oh, of course, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so what sort of season did you have?
It was a hard season because basically it was an offshoot of a Formula 3000 car.
Yes,
They needed to get a car up and running, and it had just a straight... Cosworth engine in it. There was no high tech details of it. It was just a basic car to actually get us onto the grid. And it was the same thing. It was like hard graft. You know, you were working weekends, late nights because of the people that we had. But it was very, very enjoyable times there. I'd say out of all the teams I've ever worked for, Leighton House was like a family.
It was. Right.
We kind of looked after each other, and
Was that the time of pre-qualifying?
Yes, it was. Yes,
it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pre-qualifying.
Yeah,
yeah. Which you had to scrape through early in the morning to see if you go through to the Grand Prix weekend.
Yeah. Oh dear, hard work, blimey.
So I remember when Adrian Newey came on board. Ian Phillips got us all together and said, right, there's a guy's coming over from IndyCars, a guy, Adrian Newey. He's a very, very clever man. So you need to treat him with respect. I want you all on your best behaviour.
Right.
He said, no playing up. He said, we've got to impress this man. So we went to the, we flew out to Rio to do a test before the race weekend. And Adrian was going to be turning up. So we landed and we checked in the hotel and then we were all bobbing about in the swimming pool because we didn't have to go into work till the following day. And we were just larking around in the pool. And all of a sudden this guy come running across the top of the pool bar and dived straight in the middle of us. And that was Adrian Newey. Yeah. He saw us there and thought, I'll make myself welcome.
Excellent. Good introduction.
And we thought, that's good. And then I remember the following morning, we're going to go to the circuit, and we all went down to reception to get into our minibuses, get them out of the car park. Yeah. And Adrian walked out the door, and he came back in, and he said to Harvey and Ian, he said, I can't find my car. So they said to him, well, where did you put it? He said, well, I just left it out in front of the hotel entrance. And they said, well, did you give any keys to anybody? He said, no. So I thought they'd park it for me. And Ian said to him, said, Adrian, you're in Brazil.
It's been
stolen.
Probably within about 5 minutes.
So, of course, all the mechanics were like roaring with laughter and thought, this guy is absolutely fantastic. We love him already.
So at that point, was he just sort of engineering the cars? Because he wasn't designing yet.
He was going to design the proper F1 car for us.
He was
just there to obviously meet everybody and see what we've got and what he can do. And he obviously did a little bit of work on the existing F1 car just to get us along. But his main focus was purely on the following year's car.
That's right.
Which was a solid carbon fibre chassis and, you know, is all the finer points to Formula One.
And what was it? I remember you must have seen that video of Jackie Stewart in about 89 testing some sort of then, virtually then current F1s. And the Leighton House, I don't know which one it was one of them. And he got in it and he said, "I've never been so tight in a car ever."
Yeah.
He said, "I can virtually not move my knees or my arms."
It was.
It was so I mean, yeah. You,
it was
you'll,
like a sausage skin. But well, I remember I think we got to Imola to do a test in Imola pre-season when the agent's first car. And the driver said, because obviously back then it was a stick gear shift. And they said, "Look, we're trying to get fifth and sixth gear.
Yeah.
Our knuckles are scraping on the inside of the cockpit." They couldn't. Yeah. And we tried adjusting the gear linkages and everything else to try and move the gear lever over to the left, but then it was rubbing on their legs.
Yeah.
So Adrian said, "Well, don't worry." He said, "I can fix this." So we said to him, "What do you mean? How are you going to fix it?" He said, "I'm going to put a bubble on the side of the car."
That's it.
He marked it out with a pen, and he cut it out, and he stayed and did an all-nighter with the fabrication guys to make a carbon blister that he bonded on the side of the chassis.
Yeah.
All the mechanics, we all came in the morning because obviously the fabricators worked with him. And I said to him, I said, "Agent, how did you learn how to do that?" He said, "In my one of my hobbies, I used to make like fish tank molds." So all about that sort of work. So he said, I stayed behind and I did it because it's my
fault.
I designed it like that. And it was brilliant. It was on the car all season.
Yeah, fair play.
Yeah.
Yeah, excellent.
And that's the sort of guy he was. He was fantastic.
Yeah.
Apart from he used to make a mess everywhere with his paperwork. Because, you know, he still does it to this day. He walks around with a notepad. And he's always, and the truckies were massively into keeping the workshop tidy, you know, for, you know, the image of the team.
Yeah.
And I used to keep saying to him, "Adrian, will you stop dropping your pens and papers all over the floor and over the bench tops? You know, tidy yourself up."
Yeah.
He kept on, "Yes, of course I will." So one day they picked all his paperwork up and threw it in the bin. And he came back in for the back of the truck after his meeting. He said, "I need my paperwork because I've done some design drawings and I need to look at them. Has anyone seen my paperwork?" And they said, "Yep, it's in the bin outside, the back of the garage." So he had to rummage through the bin to get his paperwork. And they said, "Well, I did warn you."
Well, this is it.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Try and tidy yourself up, mate.
Great days.
Yeah. So it wasn't a very successful season, the first Adrian Newey car, was it?
Not really, no, because obviously it was all very, very new. All these concepts were very complicated.
Yes. You know,
because he was even working on active suspension back then.
Oh, really?
I remember, yeah. He had this model in one of the in the workshop bays, and he'd be playing around with that. Nobody understood what it was, but it was an active suspension system.
Gosh.
So he was integrating all these ideas into the build of the car.
Yeah.
But obviously, he didn't quite understand if they'd work or not. So we were constantly changing things around, you know, especially the aerodynamics, because that was his big thing.
Yes.
Always changing the bits and pieces on the wings and the angles and the amount of movement it can have. You know, he was way in front of everybody else in the teams.
Yeah. And still is.
Oh, yeah. But I think this is why, you know, the team, it was a learning curve for a new team.
Absolutely. And for him as well.
Yeah. And obviously for a team like we were, it was beneficial to us. Leighton House, for me, you know, after all the teams I've worked for, quite, you know, a fair few and big teams as well, Leighton House to me was the best team. It was like a family. You know, all the guys, they work closely together. You know, if one guy went away to a race weekend and he might have had some issues in his personal life and you could see that he was a little bit under the weather, he'd all kind of jump in to do his work. And
it's nice.
Socially, we all got on very well. You know, every evening after we got back to the hotel, we'd sit and have a beer in the bar and have a bit of a laugh and a giggle, and even right the way up to the very top, with Ian Phillips, he was one of the boys. He didn't put himself on a pedestal. He was
Excellent.
like us. He'd mix with us. So yeah, it was a fantastic, fantastic time. It really was.
Excellent. I mean, they say that about Tyrrells as well, don't they? They were a family team.
Yeah, the old
I think
school.
one race in 87 I need to bring up, Chris. Spa.
Oh yeah. That
Go on then.
was
Tell me about it.
well, all the cars went onto the grid, and as I said, it was Spa is quite unique, and I think it was whose car was it?
Do you mean?
Yeah, Mark Guzman's car. He went as he went down to do his parade, that run to the grid, going down the hill towards Eau Rouge,
Yes.
cut out, just stopped.
Right.
They come on the radio and said about it, and Harvey Spencer said to him, he said, right, well, get back here, we'll get the spare car ready for you to go get onto the grid. So Guzman got out of his car, ran all the way back through the old pit lane, back up the hill, and he sent his two mechanics down to push the car out of the way and see if they could see what the problem was. So Robin Day jumped in, switched the ignition on, and everything lit up. And his second mechanic with him, Barney Drew Smile, I think it was there with him. And where it was on a hill, they put it in first gear, dropped the clutch, and it started up. So he got on the radio and he said to him, he said, I've managed to get the engine running. So Harvey said to him, well, get the car back here as quick as you can, because
Right.
we need it. Because obviously the race car had all the updated parts, and the spare
Of
car
course.
was like a race behind all the time. So Barney grabbed hold of the airbox on top of the engine cover, and Robin drove the car all the way back. And as he was coming back to the bus stop chicane just before the pit stri the pit lane entrance, I think it was one of the Ferraris was obviously late going to the grid, and he was barreling round so he can form up. And this Ferrari came flying past the pair of them, and Robin said to me, he said, my God, he said, I thought the race had started. He was expecting 20 odd cars to come flying past. But there is a video, I think I've got the video, of them driving the car back with Barney
God,
holding
brilliant.
onto the roll hoop.
Yes.
I mean, you imagine doing that now?
You wouldn't be allowed near the car, would you? Even though
No,
you're a mechanic, you're not
no.
allowed near the car, let
When
alone
Harvey
drive it.
said, like, see if you can get the car back, I think he meant like pull it off into a safe area and see if they've got a truck down there, they could lift it up and bring it back. He didn't expect him to drive it back. Well, none of us did.
And do virtually a
Nobody
full
batted an
lap.
eyelid. There was no interference from the marshals, or there was
No.
no repercussions afterwards. It was just that's the way it is. That's what.
And so that car did start the race then.
Yeah.
So I wonder what was wrong with it in the first place.
I think it was just like an electronics glitch, because back then the electronics weren't as sophisticated as they are now,
No,
obviously.
that's true.
I mean, there was one where I think it was Japan. I think Capelli was leading the race, and the engine just cut out and pulled over on the pit straight and got out the car. But all he had to do was flick the ignition on and off a few times, and it would reset everything, and he could have started off, carried on.
Oh,
But back
yeah.
then, the drivers didn't really think about that. They had to be
No.
told to do it because the electronics and on the car was very, very in its early stages, what it is now.
Yes.
So, yeah.
God. So 88, you were still at Leighton House.
Yeah.
Are you getting to?
88 to 91, I think, is when they shut up shop.
Okay. So what, you're out of work at
Yeah,
that again.
yeah,
This
yeah.
is the way
Because
it goes, isn't it?
they slowly laid more and more people off. They started with doing half a dozen, and it went up to a dozen, and because they knew that this was the end of the line for the team. So they just basically dribbled people out the door. So,
Because the owner had I can't remember his name now, the Japanese guy, Chris, he'd been killed in a car crash.
Agari was his name?
I can't remember
his name was, yeah.
He'd had a car accident, hadn't he?
Yeah.
Which didn't help things.
No.
Shame.
Yeah, no. So, you know, the Japanese, they didn't have a massive involvement with us at most of the races, but obviously the Japanese Grand Prix was a huge thing.
Yes.
You know, they were always there. And, I mean, I remember going when we went to one Japanese race and the garages were empty, and the normal thing we do is we get the brooms out and just give the garage floor a bit of a sweep up before we start unloading. Yep. And this yep. guy came up with a suit on, tie, everything, white shirt, and he said, "Give me that. I'll do that." He was one of the Japanese guys who worked for Leighton House. And I said, no, that's fine. He said, no, I can do it. So he swept the floor with his suit on.
Yeah.
Because it's like the Japanese way.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So they were very impressive in that respect, very.
Yeah. So what was next, Chris?
Well, obviously, there wasn't a lot going on at that time. And the next one was, it was the resurrection of the Brabham with they bought an old Brabham car,
right?
But I can't remember what the name of the team was. But the driver, who was the female driver? She died a while ago.
Oh,
Giovanni.
I was going to say Giovanni Amati.
Yes, she was one of the drivers.
Yeah. Okay.
And Bernie was trying. He was kind of backing the
team.
And he promised there was going to be all these, if we can have a lady driver in the car, we can attract all these female sponsorships, you know, perfumes, clothing and stuff like that. But the car was basically a dog. It was awful.
Yeah.
And it was never, ever good. And that was the same thing. They lasted, what, one season, if that, and just shut the doors.
Yeah.
It was a, you know... Yeah. It was a struggle because we were using old bits and pieces from years gone by.
Yeah, that's no good.
And I think Damon Hill.
Yeah, he did.
Drove it. And I remember he took a load of drawings down to Patrick Head at Williams because he was their test driver.
Yes.
And they looked at it and they said, "This car is about as aerodynamic as a house brick. There's nothing to do with it." And then we found out that when Brabham knew that they were going to shut down and get laid off with no redundancies as such.
No.
A lot of the fabricators, they changed the drawings for the suspension. So when John McDonald's team of people took it over, they had all the suspension fabricated, from the drawings that had been altered.
Yeah.
This is why the car was handling like a dog. And it was quite a few months into the season that we found out what had been going on. Because whatever you changed on the car, it didn't make any impact.
No.
And I can remember the British Grand Prix, because obviously Damon Hill was test driver for Williams.
That's right, at
and
the same
we
time.
He started at the back of the grid, and I had to wave him off the pit wall because he said he couldn't see the start lights or the flag.
So
he was round the corner.
Yep.
And as Mansell crossed the line to win the Grand Prix, he overtook Damon Hill, who was last, about three laps behind.
Yes.
And Damon Hill was screaming over the radio, "I'm never going to drive this car again. It's a dog. That car that's just overtaken me and won the race, I've done all the development work on that. It's not fair." He was screaming like mad. Yeah. And that was the demise
of
it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Dear.
But then, obviously... Back then, a lot of the teams over the winter time, they used to shut down. You know, they keep you employed, but you weren't paid. So for a good 2 or 3 months, until they started building the new car, you had no work. So what I did, I took my HGV license so I could work over the winter. And I was driving for different companies, you know, heavy goods and all that. And that's what kept me going over the winter months for a few years. As one team kind of finished, and then the Brabham team finished, that's what I did. Because then it moved moved on to...
So then it was, I've got down here... Yeah. Simtek?
Yes, yeah. I was delivering to a company near to where Simtek were based, and I saw their F1 trucks parked up. So as I got out of the cab of my lorry after I'd done my load offloading down the road, and I remember Charlie Moody was the team manager, and I knew Charlie for quite some years, and I went into the factory and asked to see him. And I said to him, I said, Charlie, so I said, how you doing? And we had a bit of a laugh and a joke. And I said, so any chance of any employment? He said, well, yeah, we can do that for you. So I started working at Simtek, which was another team
Excellent.
struggling. Bless them. Lovely, lovely
That
car,
was
but
to that cash trap.
yeah, it was
Yeah.
Nick Worth, I think it wasn't it? Nick Worth's car. Yeah, we
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
and it's the same thing. And I used
Yeah.
to at the end of every season, they lay us all off. And I remember we did the Australian Grand Prix, last one of the year, and Charlie called us into the office and said, "Okay, boys, well, you know what the situation is." He said, "We'll hopefully be able to re-employ you back in January." He said, "But from now until then," he said, "we're shutting down." He said, "But when we, if we do get up and running again, I'll give you a call." So I flew back non-stop from Australia and walked in through my front door with my backpack on, and my phone rang, and it was Brian Lambert from Williams, who was a, you're frozen again. You back up and running?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. So I walked in through the front door after getting off the flight from Australia with my suitcase and my backpack, and my phone rang, and it was Brian Lambert from Williams, test team manager. And he said, "Oh, hello,
Oh,
Chris." He said, "I understand
okay.
you've got an HGV1 license." So I said, "Well, yes, I have." And he said, "Oh, I need somebody to drive a truck down to Paul Ricard for me because one of our truck drivers has gone sick." He said, "Do you think you'll be able to do it for us?" So I said, "Well, yes, I could. I can do that." I said, "So when would you need me?" He said, "Now." So I had to turn around, jump back in my car, drive down to Didcot, get in the truck, and drive it all the way down to Paul Ricard, getting off the flight from Australia. And then when I was there,
Oh, blimey.
he said, "One of the mechanics has got to fly home. Somebody in his family's poorly." He said, "But you're a mechanic, aren't you?" I said, "Well, yeah, I am. Have you frozen again?" That's it. So I said, "Yeah, I am. I'm a mechanic." He said, "Well, would you mind working on the car for us?" So I said, "Well, no, that's fine." So I spent a week down at
No.
Port Picard working on the car for the mechanic, and then drove the truck back. And when I got back to England, he phoned me up. He said, "I'd like to give you a job." He said, "Not driving the truck, as a mechanic." And that's how I
Excellent.
started at Williams. Yeah.
That
Then you missed.
was what, 91?
That would be 95.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you missed out Pacific Race, and I worked with those for a while, for a few months.
Yes.
Yeah, I was asked to go and be a mechanic for that, and that was the biggest nightmare of my life. Because
I
they
bet
wanted
it was.
to
I bet
use
that's the money was there.
a Formula 3000 car, and I remember
All right.
Coulthard was driving for Formula 3000 team at the time, and he was showing some people around because they were trying to sell his old car, and he came up to me and he said, "Chris," he said, "there's no front rockers in the car that we're trying to sell. Do you know why?" And I said, "I don't know, mate. I've only just started it a couple of weeks. I'll go and find out." So I went and spoke to one of the other guys. I said, "Well, yeah, they're in the Formula One car we're building. They took the front rockers out of the Formula 3000 car and put it into the Formula One car." And I thought, "Oh my God." I
Oh,
remember we were loading the truck up
here
one
we go again.
night. Yeah, we were loading the truck up one night, and the same thing. They had no design people there. And the car's loaded on the truck, and Is it was it Wicks was the manager there? Can't remember.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah, he came out and he said, "We've been looking at some temperatures." And he said, "In the last race, the engine was running a little bit hot. Can we get the car out of the truck, please? We'll have a look at something." So we unloaded the truck again, got the car out, and then basically he said, "Yes, we need to move the radiators." And we said, "Pardon?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "I want them." He put his arm out like that, and he said, "Basically, instead of it being there, I want them moved to there, a bigger angle." So we had to, all through the night, we had to take the radiators off. The fabricators had to make new end pieces for the radiators so they fit into the system. The carbon fiber guys had to adapt the inlet ducts. And I'm sitting there thinking, what am I
This
doing?
is
This is madness.
me.
But then a few races later, I drove up to Norfolk from where I live down south. And as I got out of the car, he said, "Oh, you've got a Class 1 license, haven't you?" I said, "Yes, I have." He said, "We need you to drive the truck down to the next race for us because one of the truck drivers can't do it." And obviously, you had two per cab.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so I drove the truck down there, then did the mechanic work for the week. Then when we were driving back, the truck driver I was driving with said, "We're just going to go past where you live on the M25." He said, "Why don't I drop you off now, save you coming all the way back up to Norfolk?" I said, "Yeah, that's great." He said, "Because, it's only a couple of hours further on for me." So he did that. Following morning, I went into work as normal. And the team manager started having a bellowing match with me. He said, "Where were you yesterday?" I said, "What do you mean, where was I?" He said, "Well, you weren't here when the truck drove in." I said, "No, because the guy I was driving with said, I'm just going past where you live. I'll drop you off there." So he said, "Well, that's not right." He said, "You're employed to do the whole day, not just part of it." So basically, I told him to stick his job where the sun don't shine and walked out the door. I said, "I've done you a favour by driving the truck down there. Yeah? Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
No more for me." So I just picked up my bag and walked out. So I only lasted a few races there because
Yeah, don't blame.
it was the demise of the place.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yes, of course. Shame. Never mind. Yeah.
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 So
Pity
then I
that.
started at good old Williams.
So, how long were you at William?
I was at Williams
Yeah,
for,
how long were you there for?
what do you mean? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. About seven, nearly 8 years. I was on the test team. I did
Oh,
some
okay.
races,
Excellent.
but I worked on the test team basically. And we were working non-stop all the time. We were never ever, because their season never stops like it is now. We were working from January all the way
No,
through to
that's
December.
right. In those days, they would.
Yeah.
So that would be with Damon, would it, to start with?
Yes, Damon.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a really, really good
Yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was with him when he.
So when Damon, I'm trying to think, remember, when he got into the F1 team, Damon proper, who was the test driver then? I can't remember.
Alexander
He didn't do it
Wurz?
himself, did he, as
No,
well?
no. Yeah, I
Was it?
can't remember.
No.
We had so many
I
different
can't think who that
drivers.
would be.
Yeah, we had young driver developers
Yeah,
and
but
all sorts of people.
yeah.
Yeah, it was a
Were
very.
you at the, I think it was at Rickard. You got in Al Unser Jr. Were you at that? Do you remember that?
Yes, that
They
was a.
tested Al Unser Jr. from
Yeah,
Williams.
it was a demonstration run, wasn't it? Yeah, they tested him.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, but I think
Yeah.
it was more of a
And he.
promotional thing than anything else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He wasn't as quick as what people thought he might have been. Never mind.
No.
I
But I
think
remember being at
he has
Rickard
been.
when Damon left, because obviously he won the
Oh, yeah.
championship. And the Williams philosophy is it's the team that wins, not the driver. Every time a driver's won a championship, like Nigel Mansell, he's suddenly just disappears.
That's
They
right.
never
Gone.
keep them going. And Damon was waiting for his contract to be renewed. And we'd gone down to Paul Ricard probably October, November time to do a week's testing down there. And he was on the point of signing for Arrows. I waved the car out. Damon went out on the circuit. All of a sudden, we heard the screaming of tyres. We thought, what's that? So the engineer got on the radio and said, "Damon, are you okay? You okay? Is everything all right?" He said, "Yes, it's fine." He said, "I'm just doing donuts." And the engineer said, "What do you mean doing donuts?" He said, "I've just signed for Arrows. I got the phone call this morning." He said, "So I'm just going to the airport. Bye." And he obviously packed his bag in the back of his car. He ran across a circuit with his race suit on, got into the car, drove to the airport. And we had to go and
Bugger
collect the
off.
smoking wreck of his car. That was him saying goodbye.
Was going to say that was his goodbye.
Yeah,
Oh,
yeah. But he was a
what a
great
shame.
man, Damon. Great man. Good fun.
I liked him. I thought he was like a straight up sort of bloke. I always
Yeah,
thought.
he was. He was always very, very good to the guys. Yeah.
So when did you finish at Williams, Chris?
I
99 or
finished
something?
at Williams, it would have
Something
been
like
2001, coming into 2001 season.
Oh,
We had
okay.
there was a lot of controversy going on at Williams, a lot of people being shuffled around and leaving. And it wasn't, I mean, there was one situation where I actually put my resignation in, and Frank Williams called me into the office and asked me, "Why are you leaving?" So I told him the reasons why, because obviously the test team manager at the time was quite a hard-working guy. He'd make you change a lot of things on the car to keep you there late at night. He was that sort of attitude. And he said, "Well, basically," he said, "I'll have a word with him, and I'm going to take some of his authority away from him." And I remember we went to a test, and we had some new brakes, front brakes, and calipers to test. And the driver went out, and he said the after a few laps, the front brakes are just locking on. So when we took them, when we got the car back, you could just about turn the front wheels. And he started to have a go at the front end mechanic that had fitted all these components, blaming him. And basically, it turns out that it was a design error. Obviously, they didn't evaluate the amount of expansion of all the components in the brakes when they get hot. So it wasn't the mechanic's fault, because well, for him, that it was spinning freely. But under the heat and the stress, they were locking up. But he still gave him a written warning because he was testing the water to see if he could get away with it. And I thought, "Oh, here we go. Yeah, Frank hasn't said what he'd do." So I resigned. I got out of there quick. And obviously, because Benetton at the time, they were looking for guys, and they'd approached me and said, "Come and work for us." So I left Williams and went to Benetton. Yeah.
So when you start, let's say when you started at Benetton, are you straight onto the test team or are you a race mechanic now?
It was started off. We did a little bit of testing, because obviously when I started, it was the time of year for doing all the testing, and then I become race team. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was a good place to be, but you have to be one of the what we used to call the Bobs, the Benetton old boys. They were. They were the hierarchy. They were, if you'd been one of the original long-term Benetton boys,
You're
you
in.
got the easy life. The new boys got the grit of the work. But it was a good environment to work in. Yeah, it was.
That was with Alonso that year, two
He
thousand.
no, he started it when Renault took over.
Oh, of course he did. A bit
Yeah.
later. Of course he was.
Yeah,
Who were
yeah.
your drivers to start?
I think it was Jean Alesi was one
Oh,
of
was
them.
it Alesi and Berger?
Yes, yeah.
When they both switched from Ferrari. That's
Yeah,
right.
yeah.
That's
Yeah,
right.
there was quite a few different changes of drivers while we were there. Yeah.
I mean, I remember one race that I was at when I was with FOM, and I think it was Hockenheim. Was it one of your cars, the front brakes locked on as it got to the grid for the start? Am I right?
Might have been,
Remember that?
yeah.
And when the lights went out, the thing couldn't move.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? I can't remember which race it was now. I seem to remember it was Hockenheim for some reason. So, so you weren't there for Gerhard's last win, which was Hockenheim, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think no, that was before. That was around 19.
That was before.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So you were on the race team by this point?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that was...
when the season started proper.
Yeah. And obviously, but even though back then we used to do racing and testing, depending on what the work rate was, you know, if the some mechanics couldn't do it, you'd be there all the time, you know, covering each other, and because that's how it was back then, because there was no curfews at night, and you test for 7 days, you know, there was none of that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were always
none of this finishing at 6 o'clock and going back to the hotel. No, oh, God, no, absolutely. Yeah.
It was quite intense.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. So after, I'm trying to think, did Alesi and Berger only had one season, didn't they? I think so, yeah.
Cause then,
and then it was Alexander Wurz, wasn't it, after that?
That's it, yeah. Yeah, Wurz, he was there.
Quite useful, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I always liked him, actually.
Yeah, he was a nice guy. There's not many drivers that I've never really disliked at all. You know, they've always been very, very good. You know,
yeah.
I mean, Gasho was quite a stern guy. You know, he didn't mingle very well, and he was quite strong in his views and quite stern. But but most of the drivers have all been pretty good. Some are quite shy. You know, they don't really.
Yeah.
Much because not because they don't want to, it's because they're, you know, the personality, the way they are.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you hear stories of people maybe like Damon at Williams needed like an arm, you know, an arm around their shoulder, and it's all right, mate, you know,
yeah,
don't worry about it, sort of thing. Sometimes the working environment's not quite the same, and you know, if a driver's treated somewhat differently from what they are, you get more out of them.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah. It's just psychology, I suppose.
Especially at Williams, because the intensity at Williams was really strong. You know, they drive to win. If you're not winning, everyone feels the pain of it. You know, it's you're not here to be second. We're here to win. And, and they have these briefings, you know, where they try and work out what little part of the jigsaw didn't quite connect properly. So it was a very intense. Yeah. Williams is probably the hardest team I've ever worked for. It's very, very hard work.
In fact, I used to get that impression too when I was there, funny enough.
Yeah.
Particularly about there didn't seem to be, I mean, you were on the inside. I always got the impression there wasn't sort of much laughing and joking going on, but there probably was.
You could, but it was frowned upon if it was noted too much. You know,
you can't enjoy yourself.
You're not here to have fun. You're here to work. And that's their mindset.
Yeah.
It drained a lot of people. It really did.
That's right. It can work against you. Absolutely. Of course it can.
Yeah.
You know, after a while you think, oh, I'm not looking forward to this.
Yeah. But that's how it came with me at the end. You know, I wasn't looking forward to going to the next race or test because you'd be there till 4 o'clock in the morning. You'd be back up again at 6, 2 hours sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back out there again. Yeah.
It's the same, isn't it? Never mind. Yeah. Okay. So later on at Benetton with Alonso, you were number one mechanic. Is that
right? Yes. Yeah. He started.
And what was he like?
He started in 2004, and I started. He's number one mechanic then, and he was a fantastic guy. He really, really was. He was. He'd always be in the garage talking to you, you know. You'd be working on the car, and he'll come and sit on top of the toolbox, and he'll be chatting away to people. You know, how's your family, and you know, what have you been doing? Where'd you have your holiday? And I used to say to him, you know, Fernando, you know, why aren't you in the motor? And he said, well, if I sit in there, he said, people just keep asking me questions. You know, it'd be either the media, the marketing, you know, or one of the engineers would come and start talking to me. Oh, did I? I forgot to ask you about. He said, if I'm out here, I'm just normal. And he said, relax. And that's what he was like. And he used to come out and and sit in the garage, and he'd always ask you, how your family, how they're doing, and where you went on your holidays, and all that sort of thing. He was, and he'd polish the car. He'd get his little duster out, and he'd be polishing the car up a little bit. And
Excellent.
he was a very,
That's the
very
way.
friendly guy.
That's always nice. Yeah.
So
And yeah,
I
when
always
you think.
remember he asked me, he called me into the back of the truck one afternoon, and he said, "Can you give me the names of all the guys that work on my car?" I said, "Well, yeah, of course I can." So I got a piece of paper and I wrote their names down and give it to him. And then I went back out and carried on working. And then a couple of races later, he came up to me and he had some envelopes. And he said, "Could you give these to the guys for me, please? Because obviously I've got to go and do a press meeting or so." I said, "Yeah, of course I can." I said, "Well, what is it?" He said, "It's just a little something from me to you guys for working on my car." So I opened my envelope up. There was probably about 500 euros in it. I said, What's this for?" He said, "Well, I get a bonus now every time I get points." And obviously, then he was always in the points. And he said, "Basically, Flavio has to give me my bonus money." And he said, "Basically, it's more than what my wages are anyway." He said, "So I thought I'd share it with you guys." I said, "No, Fernando, you don't have to do that. Please, you don't have to do it." He said, "No, I want to because you help me do what I get."
Yeah, of
I went
course.
out and give it out to the guys, and they were absolutely blown away by it. And every few races, he'd come out with these little envelopes and give them to me again,
Same again.
all season.
Blimey. That's
And
nice.
I remember when he went to McLaren's, he left Renault to go to McLaren, and he went to do it there, and it was noted, and Ron Dennis went up to him and said, "You can't do that." He said, "We're not having individual gifts to people, so stop it now." And he wouldn't let him do it to his mechanics at McLaren.
Shame. Makes a bit more human.
But that's how he was. He appreciated what
That's nice.
everybody did for him, and he was always very jovial. And he'd always have good fun with you and chat with you. And he was a good guy. And when he crashed, was not very often. Or went off track and damaged the car, he'd always apologize, He really would. He was a great guy, really good guy. Good.
Nice. So how long are you at Benetton for, Chris?
I was at, well, Benetton Renault. I started there the end of 2000, coming into 2001. And I was on the race team until 2006. I started on the race team, with Kovalainen, because Alonso had left, and there was a few what you could call issues, I think, within the team. There was a lot of movement around the team, and there was some promotions going on, and one of the guys, one of the Benetton old boys, he was promoted up to chief mechanic because the old chief mechanic we had left and gone, I think, to Red Bull. So there was a, it wasn't the same. It didn't quite feel right, and I wasn't happy. And I had a bit of a coming together with the team manager at one race weekend, and I left the race team, and I took up as a chief mechanic on the test and development team. So I stopped racing probably about four or five races into the 2006 season. It wasn't for me anymore.
Fair
They said
enough.
to me, "Right, we'll move you over and we'll give you the job as chief mechanic." And we used to do a lot of the testing back then, and doing all the driver development work, that sort of thing. And we did that until 2015, when basically the Lotus brand, as it was called back then, was in demise. The whole team was collapsing. They had no financial input. And we just went in one morning, and they just laid us off.
Gosh.
All our department, all, because we used to train all the young mechanics before they went to the racing team.
Oh, right, as well.
Yeah, all the new engineers that we used to get through the system, they come and work with us when we go
Yeah,
and do a test
test.
somewhere, and they put them up front of the garage and give them some difficult things to try and work out to kind of get them up to speed. And we train young mechanics up so they get used to the work. So if one of the race team mechanics left or fell ill, they could step in. So it was like a training
Yes, I see.
program as well, which was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had
Yeah.
four
Yeah.
cars running all the time.
Oh,
And we were out on the road all the time, but we were getting paid by different companies to go and do demonstrations. So we were making money for the team.
yeah.
We weren't like working with no input. And they decided to shut us down. So we went in one day, and I saw, I think it's about 12 of us
Wow.
got laid off. And that was the end of it. Yeah.
Gosh,
It
you didn't
was
see it
sad.
coming.
No, it was all very, very fast. And that was a demise of
Oh, yeah.
the Renault team as it was back then. You could see it just
Yeah,
crumbling.
sure.
A lot of the good
Yeah,
staff
just
had left, and yeah. And now it's become the
shame,
Alpine
isn't it?
brand. And you can see we're at the back of the grid now, aren't they?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
It
it's a
is a shame.
shame, isn't it?
It is a shame.
Oh, dear. Yeah, it is. Okay. So you finished up, Chris, at Virgin Formula E. Is that right?
Yeah, because what we were doing, one of our development drivers was approached by Richard Branson to
Oh,
drive
yeah.
the Formula E team that they were going to create, but they didn't have a team. So he approached the Lotus Renault part, which we were working on, and they said, "Well, okay, well, the test and development team, they can do the Formula E."
Right.
So we were doing the Formula One side for 3 or 4 days, and then we go up to
Right.
Donington, where the Formula E teams were based, to set up the Virgin Formula E team.
Right.
So we were backwards
Yeah.
and forwards 7 days a week, and
Gosh.
then we did all the test and development work to get everybody understanding how the electric cars work and everything else. And
Yeah.
then we did the first season of racing. And then what they did then, they slowly started to bring their own people in. So as they brought their own people in, Virgin, they'd move our people away. So that basically come to an end at the end of 2015 as well. So the
All
F1 thing
right.
shut down, and then we thought, oh,
Yeah.
that'd be right, because Virgin, we can just carry on doing that. But then Virgin said, well, no, we've got our own staff coming in now. Yeah, and that was the end of
Yeah.
that. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were very busy boys. All the guys I had working for me, they were absolutely non-stop, flat out, trying to
Yeah.
get in between the Formula E and the Formula One. I was driving non-stop backwards and forwards up to Donington
Yeah.
every day, virtually.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was 2015.
Yeah.
Was that it for you?
For motor, doing the mechanical side. I basically then started work at ATL doing
Oh
their
yeah.
fuel systems,
Yes.
and they needed somebody to run their build shop in the doing the fuel tanks and the fuel systems, because obviously a lot of race cars, Can-Am, Indy cars, everyone uses the same system. So I worked there for a couple of years, I think it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh, I bet they were busy. Bloody
It
hell.
was. It was a very, very busy place, but it was not very well kind of organized. It was we had one young lad. He came from working on the oil rigs up in Scotland, and they employed him
Right.
to work on fuel systems, and he'd never done anything like this before in his life. So I gave him this big offshore powerboat tank to do, because I thought it's huge, so you can see how the build of it goes and how all the systems work and what to look out for. And I always remember we went into a morning meeting, and the marketing girl said, "That powerboat tank, it was nearly a day late to being delivered. Why?" because I was in charge of the build shop. And I said, well, we've got a young lad working with us. I said, we needed him to work on something to get him trained. And I thought this big tank would be ideal for him before he starts working on the small intricate tanks. And she said, well, that's not acceptable. I said, well, how do you expect anybody to learn? Okay, it was a day late going to, goods out. I said, but anybody could have made it a day late. We've got to start somewhere with these guys. And she wouldn't, she was not going to have any of it. So I walked out of there as well. I thought, no, sorry, you've got to cut some slack sometimes. Because after
Yeah, of
working
course you
Formula
have.
One,
That's right.
we understand the intricacies and all that sort of thing. So yeah. So I worked there for a couple of years, I think. Yeah. That was it.
Oh dear, what a shame.
Yeah.
Never mind. So are you retired now, Chris?
Yes, yeah, I finished about 2 years ago nearly. Yeah, I got to my retirement age, and I thought, no, you got to stop, because it just never. Do you know what I mean? You got to take a breather now and again. But the good thing is,
That's right, that's right. Now, do you miss it? Do you miss it, Chris?
I miss some aspects of it, but not obviously the late nights, the intensity,
No.
where you get a phone call. Oh, didn't we tell you? The flight's not leaving in 2 days' time, it's leaving tomorrow morning. You need to get back to the factory now. I don't miss all that sort of stuff. But I
No,
miss the
come
guys, I have to say. I do miss, the camaraderie with a lot of the mechanics I
Yes.
work with, because we were,
Yeah.
close. It was good fun. But now
Yeah.
I've got my own engineer at home now. It's called the wife.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
She's my little
So she gets
engineer,
you doing
I call her. Because every
stuff.
time we do something in the garden, like plant pots and things, she does like an engineer does. She said, I said I wanted that plant there. I've just have a thought, just like engineers do. Do you think we could just move it slightly? And that's what they
Move it
used to
over
do in the
there.
evenings. They'll come out at like
Or
midnight.
wanting a foot.
Yeah, Rod
That's
Nelson
right.
would come out at midnight and say, oh, I forgot to tell you, we had a little murmur on the fuel tank. Do you think you could go in the fuel tank and have a little look for me? And I'm thinking, you've had 8 hours to look at
Yes.
the data. It's
And
now
you're telling me.
midnight. Yeah, that's what engineers are like, bless them.
Exactly. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, Chris.
Okay,
Thanks
mate.
very much indeed. That was good fun. Thank you for that.